Thank you so much. I want to say hi, family. It's so great to be here with you. And I want to say to Tamara, who I love, you know, she knew that I was going through some stuff earlier this year. And, you know, she's just so loving to me and to all of us. And the people that put on this meeting, you know, shout out to you for all the work that you do, because the meeting's fantastic. And Tamara's an inspiration to me. And I love you dearly, Tamara. And I'm Tyla, and I am an alcoholic, and I am recovered. And my sobriety date is, my God-given sobriety date, is December 26, 1989. I have 32 years, and no one is more, surprised than me, because I didn't think I'd live to be 30, let alone have 32 years. I'm just so grateful and so honored. And I love God so much that I can't believe what He's done in my life, but I believe it. But sometimes it's just beyond what I can believe, that I never thought the life that I have today was possible. And I wanted to share on this topic, which I'll bring up a little further in, because I just went through, some of you know that about a year and a half ago, I went through an illness of, I started to have heart palpitations, and it was frightening. And I had to quit speaking for a while, because I didn't know if I'd go into, like, it's like a seizure. I didn't know if I would go into it. And it was one of the scary, because I'm really healthy, and it was one of the scariest times for me. And so many people on this meeting from San Diego walked me through this, you know, Pat and Tom. And I want to say welcome to all the people that I identified as being newer, and welcome back to the person that identified as relapsing. So it was really scary for me, and I had to quit speaking. And I think back on it, and you know, there was a, when it started to happen, I couldn't catch my breath, and you almost pass out, and it's like a seizure. And, you know, I didn't know if I was going to make it. I didn't know if I was going to live or die. And, you know, I just kept praying, because I believe in the healing that's in the big book. And I believe in the healing that's in our big book. And that's what I just hung on to. But it was really, you know, the greatest gift is one day at a time. You know, to me, that gift of living right now, like Tamara said, right here, right now, in the present moment, and being able, that is the way that I get through all my difficulties. And this was one of the hardest ones. And so I could feel, they got my heart under control, and I'm doing really well right now. And hopefully I'm going to come off the medication, because I found out it was my thyroid. And I hate to give you this much information, because I know this is not a therapeutic meeting, but I just wanted to let people know, because some people kind of knew. And I just wanted to share with you, because you're all important to me. And I like to open up my heart and let you know where I'm at, you know. And so they found out it was my thyroid. So right now they're lowering my thyroid, and it's a long, slow process. I've had no palpitations, no seizures for over 6 months. And I'm just so grateful, you guys. I just thank God. And now I can speak more, because I didn't know if I was going to go into a seizure. So recently I could tell that I could feel I was spiritually unfit. I could tell that the spiritual malady was getting to me. I could feel when I feel spiritually unfit the most, it's restless, irritable, and discontent. And I like to add recklessness, be reckless when I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. So I could feel it, you know, I could feel that edge between me and the people around me, you know, like it says in the spiritual malady, having trouble in personal relationships. That's the first place that I notice that I'm not doing as well as I know I'd like to, or that I can. And I work a very, very strong 10 and 11 every day. So usually that will get me okay. But I try to do a inventory every year, all 12 steps every year and a half. But this time I just did an inventory, which I haven't done in 20 years. Just a resentment inventory. But I just felt like that's what God guided me to do. And you know, when you have to do an inventory, when you're doing prayer and meditation, and this, and the list of names that need to be on that inventory keep showing up, And like I would be prayer and meditation, put this one on and put this one on, and the list would increase. And so I was like, okay, God, I got it. And, you know, I mean, I don't love to do inventory. I certainly love the results of it, but I don't love to do it. And I think most of the people I work with don't always love to do it, but I love what it does to my life. So that's why I wanted to share. I'm only going to share a few highlights on resentment, fear, and sex, because my most important focus to share with you is the way that we do 5, 6, and 7, the way that the Big Book Awakening group does it, because it is so unique, the way that we do inventory. And I don't mean it's anything different than the Big Book, but it's different than any experience I had. And I hope that nothing that anyone does is wrong. I don't want you to think that any way you do the work is just fine. But this work has just taken me further than any other work that I did, especially in 4 through 7, but all of it. And so that's why I wanted to share it with you, because I just finished it this week. I just did 6, 5. I had one more resentment so that came up before I did 5, before I did 6 and 7. So I read that this week, and then I did 6 and 7. I thought, you know, I really want to share this. When I told Tamara I wanted to share it, it was because I just finished a workshop in Canada on 5, 6, and 7. And so that's made me want to share it with you. And then I did it myself. And, you know, it's funny, because when I go into it sometimes, I wonder if you guys feel like this. Sometimes when I go into it, I just think, I've just done this too much. It's probably not going to work this time, you know? And I had such a powerful experience that's what I want to share too. It was so freeing. And I think this is how freed you want to be. And you guys, a lot of you know, I work with Mark Houston, and that he used to say that all the time. And this is where I get free from the things that I think are blocking me. They're probably not. And I'll talk about that. But so I looked at it to see, made the list, you know, and it says that it tells me the preview. Well, it tells me the preview of the 4th step on page 62, which I love. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear. Self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, 100 forms of each, not 100 forms together, 100 forms of fear, 100 forms of self-delusion, 100 forms of self-seeking, 100 forms of self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Column 2, the cause. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation. That means I did nothing, but I invariably means every time. I invariably find that at some time in the past, I made decisions based on self, which placed me in a position to be hurt. That paragraph must get proven in inventory. And any way that I do inventory that does not prove that paragraph, how can I expect to get the promises that are in the Big Book if I don't do the work the way it is in the Big Book? And I didn't get the work the way I do it now until I was 12 years sober. So I had a lot of experience with other ways of doing the steps, and it never took me to where the work took me. And I'm not here to try to sell you on the way I did the work. I just want to share with you how joyous I am over the work, the experience of it, because it says depth and weight. Depth is my knowledge and weight is my experience with it. So I need both depth and weight of this. So that's what I want to share with you today, and how this paragraph has gotten proven in my life. And it never was before I did the work this way. I didn't really know, even the way I did the work, I didn't really know what this 4-step meant, if that makes sense to you. I mean, I would do it, I would finish it, and I would wonder, okay. And then we would make lists of character defects, and we would work on them each week or each day or different ones, and look at the opposite and all kinds of ways that we did it. To me, the way that I learned to do it now is the way that the Big Book is talking about. So it says on page 64 that I'm going to take an inventory. Any business that doesn't take an inventory, and I'm in the spiritual business, usually goes broke. I'm going to face and be rid of the things that are blocking me. I'm going to face and be rid of and never have to do it again. Liquor's but a symptom. It says so. it says that I love this. If the owner of the business is to be successful, do I want to be successful in my recovery? I don't know why I just clicked off. Can you guys hear me okay? Thank you so much. If I start breaking up, let me know. It says, if the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. And I fool myself about the value of hanging on to resentment. And I will share with you how that came about. But first, I want to talk about resentment's the number one offender. It kills more alcoholics than anything else. And I'm a real alcoholic. I'm not a little PP hard drinker. Oh, no. I am a hope to die alcoholic. And I was out there drinking and doing other things for 23 years. And so there's no doubt in my mind that I'm not going to go into my first step, but I want you to know I cannot control the amount when I drink, physical craving, and I cannot control the stop when I have nothing in my system. I cannot control the mental obsession, and I have a spiritual malady, a spiritual disease. And that's what it says here about resentment, that resentment it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And that's, what does spiritually sick mean to me? I mean, when I'm working, taking people through the work, we need to discuss it. What does spiritually sick mean to me? It means that I'm angry, resentful, separated, disconnected, in pain, in depression. And you can be spiritually sick in sobriety and not have to write a whole, you know, big four step. You can work through it, which I do most of the time in a 10 and 11. I don't get feeling that spiritually sick that often anymore because I've been around a long time and I work a really strong program. But this time I really was. And so I'm going to read to you something that I love that explains being spiritually sick. And this is from Henry Nouwen. And this is my favorite author. God sees us as we really are, neither more nor less, and loves us. I have trouble even seeing myself, much less others. I learned to be a hypocrite because I learned that transparency and authenticity are unacceptable at the least, or leave me vulnerable and open to attack at the worst. And that is what being spiritually sick is like for most of us. My personality, my very self, has become deformed. My very self has become deformed, twisted and out of shape, and I am distorted by the burden to perform. Twisted out of shape, and I am distorted by the burden to perform. The burden to perform, to constantly have to prove myself, to be worthy, to be acceptable, to be loved. And year by year, I get more and more further and further away from what I really am and from who I really am in God's eyes. Until one day I find I don't even know who I am anymore. That's where that feeling of loneliness and isolation comes from. That is the bondage of self. I am bound to a self that is not me. And I can't set myself free, and God can. And that's Henry Nouwen. And for me, that is the best description of when I first got here. When I first got here, I was bound to a self that I didn't even know. There were so many Tylas that I thought I was a multiple personality. I went to therapy and I told the therapist at 5 years sober, I had a psychotic break, and I went to therapy and I told him, I said, I am a multiple personality. I said, I felt like a different person every place I went. When I was with my family and I was the perfect daughter, my brother, the perfect sister, in AA meetings, Miss AA, perfect Miss AA, right? And none of those personalities were integrated. And the therapist told me that I wasn't. This is what I would say, same as Dr. Hollander. Doctor, do you see that I'm here? Do you see that I'm sitting here seeing you? He goes, yes. I said, I am not here. I'm not here. I don't know where the hell I am. I am not here. And that's how broken and screwed up I was from so many years out there in the last years of my life doing prostitution and on the streets. And I think that had a lot to do with me getting so splintered and broken. All of us, lots of people are like this. It's not unusual. You know, but I want to share that with you because I'm not like that anymore. But that was the way I was. I was so, I didn't think, I just thought that if I could survive in sobriety, if I could just survive my life, and if I lived at the survival level, because that's all I knew how to live with because I had so much trauma from my past. If I could live at the survival level, that would be okay. I could settle for that. And my life today thrives. And I never thought it was possible. So here we are. We're looking at being spiritually sick. And I just want to get back to the page. We're looking at being spiritually sick. And what is that? And so I'm making this list. I make a list of the people for my inventory. And I take it to prayer and I ask God to reveal to me who needs to be on this list. People, institutions, and principles. And I do a lot of inventory on self-defeating beliefs that have become guiding principles in my life. And Pat T, who's on this call, has a great recording up on our website on working self-defeating beliefs. Because the longer you're sober, the less it becomes about the people. I had people on this one, but not as much as in the beginning, but I had principles that self-defeating beliefs are, I'm too old to ever get married. Not that I want to get married, not at all. But this is just one that people might say, I'm too old to ever get married. That idea, that belief can haunt you. You know, when you wake up each day and you have that haunting belief, I'll never get a raise at work. I'll never be able to pay my bills. One of mine was, I'm too defective to ever be loved, and it's permanent. That was a haunting belief to me that I don't have anymore because I wrote inventory a while ago on it. And I believe that I was too defective to ever be loved because of my past, you know, and I don't feel that way today because I've done the work on it. So I make the list of who needs to be on it, persons, institutions, principles. Did I skip something? And let me just see this people, institutions, and principles. Yes, no, I didn't skip any. I just want to make sure. And principles, and I make the list, and then I'm going to write the cause. And I do it in a prayerful way, because you know, from the third step prayer to the seventh step prayer, there is no amends on the third step prayer, because that's all one prayer. How it works is how it works. Yes, it is. And if there's all one prayer. And so I write the cause. And one of the things is that I need to see, the third column is written out on page 65. I don't want to get too detailed into directions because it's too hard to follow. I don't want to read you stuff. I want to give you some general ideas of what I saw that changed my life so much that I had never seen any other way that I did the work. So we write an extended third column, which means, you know, I resent Michael. This is true. He threatened and Wendy's laughing. I'm with you, girl. He threatened to kill me 4 times. I lived with an undercover cop that was undercover narcotics for 11 years. And when I tried to leave him, he put a gun to my head, sometimes one time for 16 hours. And so that was in my 20s. And I would never write inventory on him. I swore, I made an inward pact with myself that I would never write his name down again. And I refused to write inventory. I would never write inventory. I was never going to write his name again. But when I found the work the way that I do it now, out of the Big Book Awakening, when I found how they did it this way, and I saw the results of it, because I didn't write he wasn't on my first list when I got this work. I flew Mark Houston out from Texas to teach me this work because I was dying in this program. If you guys haven't listened to Mark Houston, you need to listen to him. He's on YouTube. He's passed now, but he's incredible. And he taught me this work. And I wouldn't put Michael's name down. And I finally did. So when I put down the cause, you know, I put down the cause, you know, Michael tried to kill me, was afraid of him, all the things that he did to me, kept me captive, all the craziness that happened in my life. Then I do the third column. See, I have to see that page 61 of the big book, where it says, I'm the actor being the director, right? I want to run the whole show. I don't want to believe that's me. I'm just so nice. I just don't do that to people. Oh, yes, I do. I do it, and I'm going to get from you what I need to get from you if I'm going to get it through being super nice, or I'm get it from being super bossy and manipulative. But I'm going to get from you what I want, and I'm going to run the show. And what happens is I'm the
Tyler, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now? Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. Okay. So on that page, I'll go back. Someone clicked in. So on that page 61, it talks about me being the actor, being the director, being really the producer of confusion. And I'm going to get what I want from you. This is what I'm going to see in the third column. The third column is me playing God. That is my script. That is the way I want you to be. That's how I want you to see me. That's how I want you to act. I continue to give you the script, but you will not read it. You will not do what the damn script says. And I want you to do what the script says, and you will not do it. So that's why I continue. It says I continue to go back to them and they hurt me. They continue to go back. They continue to hurt me, and I continue to go back to them because I'm trying to change them, and they just won't follow the script. So I have to see if I'm going to quit playing God, like it says on page 62, I have to quit playing God. If I'm going to do that, I have to see how playing God doesn't work. If you're a stubborn alcoholic like me, it's important for me to see that. And I get in when I'm feeling untreated, when I am untreated, when I'm not in fit spiritual condition, I more and more get into the role of playing God, because things are not going the way I think they are. And I think my managing my external life will change my internal condition. It will not. But I think it. When I'm afraid, when I'm irritable, when I'm feeling disconnected, I'm going to start to control and try to fix the world around me. So I start to see that when it says on page 62 that I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate, I step on the toes of my fellows by my demands, by who I want you to be, who I need you to be. You may not even know it. I don't have to say anything, and I can be manipulating and demand from you. And that's how you get pushy, you get manipulative. However I do it, and I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. And I see it happens all the time. So I begin to see in that third column, as I look at my self-esteem, my pride, my ambition, my security, my personal relationships, my sex relations, and my pocketbook, when I look at those things, seeing how I'm assigning roles to myself and to you to be who I need you to be okay. And I hope that you're around long enough and write inventory this way sometime, that you see that even if the people I'm writing about read my script and do everything I want them to do on column 3, I still won't be okay, because they are not the problem. Every role that I write, self-esteem with Michael, I am the perfect girlfriend, fear, not good enough. Okay. The truth is not I am the perfect girlfriend. The truth is that I believe I'm not good enough. The truth is the fear next to it. And that's what's driving it. That's what's powering it. That's what's making me put a demand on you. If that fear is taken away from that third column, I will be able to find a place of neutrality, like it tells me in step 10. I won't be reactive. I hate to say the word triggered, but I won't be triggered. I won't be reactive. Like it says in the back of the book in the spiritual experience, right? Having had a spiritual experience, my whole reactions to life change. And that is absolutely what happens. Only when I've done an inventory this deep. It did not happen before. And I've done these inventories, I don't know, 20 times, 30 times, you know, so, and taken lots of people through. So it's not just me. I've seen the evidence in other people's lives. So I look and I see what I'm supposed to see in that third column, right? And it says, I'm not sure of my time. It says over on page 66. Is it plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility, unhappiness? Futility is uselessness and unhappiness. They're going to tell us that resentment leads to, resentment is poison. It kills more alcoholic. To the precise extent that I permit these. I permit them. Oh no, Thea, what the hell is this book talking about? Now I permit these resentments because when I have a way out of these, when I have an exercise on the way out, then it's up to me. They just don't land on me. I am not a victim. And people that have a victim mentality and don't get out of it by doing a powerful fourth step have miserable sobriety. There's not hardly anything except like child abuse and things like that that happened to me in my life that I didn't have a part in, that I didn't do something in it. And I have to find that. That's my step to freedom. To the extent that I permit these, do I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? Resentment squanders my spirit. Squander means waste. It wastes my spirit. And I don't want my spirit to be wasted anymore. It got wasted enough out there on the streets. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, I'm in the middle of page 66. This business of resentment is infinitely grave. So I say, are you, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience? Is that your hope? You're sitting opposite me. We're doing the work. Is that your hope? Well, if you're not working 10 and 11, it's not your hope. Because that's where the spiritual experience, that's the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. If you're not working it, you're not hoping for it. And you're going to be in trouble because it's like walking up a mountain made of ice. If you're standing still, you're sliding backwards. And I have to continue to grow spiritually. This, we found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Okay, so it says, for when harboring such feelings of resentment, you can look at a harbor. And you can see in the boats, they're all tied to the dock in a harbor. There's all these boats tied to the dock. It doesn't mean I can't get angry and I can't get resentful, but I cannot harbor them. I have to get rid of them. I want to gather all those resentments and tie them to the dock of my soul. And I want to blame you and I want to frame you and I want to hang you on my wall in a frame and say, you're the dirty so-and-so because you did this one thing, right? And you're in that frame in my life for life. And I am going to go on. And you guys, I have had lots of resentments and they have, you know, I can't stand them and they're eating, showering and sleeping with me. You people have heard me. I always say it's like a dog with a bone. You ever seen a dog with a bone? You give them a bone. So you give me a resentment and the dog goes out there and it buries the bone. It's so happy. Oh, it buries the bone. The next day he goes out there and he digs up the bone. That's me with my resentments. I bury it when I go to bed, or I bury it inside of my spirit. And then the next day I'm digging it up and I'm running around. I'm so excited. The next night I bury the bone. How long am I going to go around this till I find a way out of this crazy prison that I'm in? And this is the way out. It says on the bottom of the page, we turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. The key to the future is, how do I master resentment so they don't master me? And I know I'm spending a lot of time on resentments because that was the main thing I wanted to talk to you about, more than fear and sex, because this is the thing where I got this time through the work the most freedom, because I didn't have a lot of fears except in the resentment, and I didn't have a lot of sex inventory. So so if I'm going to, and bottom of the page, this is our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick like me, though I did not like their symptoms and the way these, I did not like their symptoms, column two, and the way they disturbed me, column three. They, like myself, were sick too. I say spiritually sick like me, because I don't like the word just sick. And you, if I can make up my own third step prayer, I can make a little changes that fit me, because I'm not sick of calling myself just sick. Spiritually sick. They're spiritually sick like me. And if they're spiritually sick like me, then I must have done what they did to me, to them, or someone else. So we write it out. How did I do? The same thing. Okay, Michael threatened to kill me. Did I threaten to kill anyone? Yes, I did. I threw a dead body out of my car on a business thing that was not legal business, by the way, in another state. And a guy died in my car and I threw out his body. So this is very exaggerated. I'm sorry I picked this example because most people are going to relate to it. But I'm glad that Mark's laughing, because I'm laughing too. So, but I look, okay, my brother stole from me. And when I get to that part, I say, did I ever steal from my brother or anyone else? And I'm writing this down. I'm trying to even it. See, I see me up here and you down here, and I'm trying to even it. There we are. Brother and sister, sister and sister. There we are, the same. If God's my father, then we're all his kids. Everything that blocks me from you blocks me from God. And I can't afford to be blocked from God. If I'm really blocked from God, am I really blocked from God? Let's talk about that in a minute. So here it is. I asked God, here's the prayer. And I'm going to read this to you. I have something to read to you. Okay. To view those who harm us as spiritually sick. To see that the reason for my fears is that I believe I have only myself to rely on. And to realize my selfishness is the cause of my sex problems are the new attitudes I have been trying to experience through the inventory. Each part of inventory takes me to a prayer to God. For resentment, I pray to be released from the control anger has on me. For fear, I ask God to remove it and direct my attention to what he would have me be. For sex problems, I ask God to mold my ideals and help and give me the strength to live up to them, to direct me about each situation. These practical prayers are the beginning of a new relationship with God. When my ideals are grounded in a power greater than myself, my life will be recreated. So each one of these inventories is going to take me to a prayer. It shows how important prayer is, because nothing is going to change in my life without prayer. And I do my fear inventory. I do my sex inventory. And I'm thinking where I want to say something I want to say. Okay. Then I go in after I do that. I go in and I do the fourth column. The fourth column is going to show me, which people say my part, but nowhere does it say my, it's going to show me where I was wrong, where I made mistakes, where I was to blame in this inventory, putting out of my minds what they did to me. I'm going to look for my own mistakes, and I'm going to look where I was selfish, dishonest. Instead of dishonest, we use self-delusion, because that's a lie to ourselves. We put dishonesty and self-seeking. You don't have to remember that. But so what I we lay it out so that fear is at the bottom of the fourth column, and fear drives my delusion. I'm so afraid that I create a delusion that will, so I don't have to sit in the fear. Then the delusion drives a selfish attitude, and a selfish attitude drives a self-seeking behavior. And that all drives the fear in the third column of what I need you to be for me to be okay. So we go over that, and we write it, and then we go over, you know, of course, in the fifth step, okay? And I begin to see that the fear is the deepest part of who I am. The fear is the deepest part of the spiritual malady, the deepest part of who I am. And what's under the fear of being unloved? What's under the fear of being rejected? What's under the fear of loneliness, right? To me, the deepest fear I have is that I'm alone in the situation, whatever situation it is, and there's no one to help me. If I don't get a relationship deep enough with the God that cares, remember the third step says God cares. God loves me, and God loves each one of you. And I pray to God that you each get a God that loves you so much that you will not believe it, that you will be swelled up and love will be pouring over. And that's how you have good relationships, because you're going to find out I have trouble in personal relationships because I need too much from them. They can't give me what I want. They are a second love. God is first love. They are second love. They are a reflection of God's love to me, but I need to have God's love to give to them. And when I'm in the position of giving rather than getting, then I'm on the spiritual path. Then my life is filled with love, because see, I have some say in the atmosphere, the spiritual atmosphere of the life that I live. The atmosphere I live in is the way I treat you. When I'm loving, kind, helpful, understanding, patient, goodness, all of that stuff, when I bring all of those stuff to my relationships throughout the day, whether they're the girl at the bank or the waitress or whatever it is, when I'm bringing that, I'm creating the energy and atmosphere that I live in with God's guidance, with God's strength, with God's blessing. I create that and with God. And that creates a different atmosphere than I live in when I'm isolated and alone. Because loneliness is one of the deepest fears that we all suffer from. And I don't suffer from it anymore because I have been alone so much. I live alone. And the last 2 years, because of COVID and my age, I've not been able to hardly go out. So I got a lot of lessons and I like being alone, but I can be lonely, but I'm never alone. And that's the difference there for me. So I want to go over to, I just will say one thing about fear and then I'm going to go over. The fear prayer, you know, we never apologize for depending on our creator. That's page 68. It says that twice. There's no place in the big book I know where it says the same thing twice in the beginning of a paragraph and at the end. So that's how important it is that they're telling us we don't apologize for God, and you're going to hear it in meetings all the time. So I hope you follow the big book and not the people in the meetings. But the fear prayer is we ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. So I'm going to outgrow fear. And sometimes when you don't think the fear prayer works, it's because it doesn't happen instantly. Because that's what I thought. You know what I mean? This fear prayer is not working because I pray it and the fear's not gone. No. I'm going to outgrow it. I'm going to outgrow it as I pray to God for the courage and the faith to walk through it. And God tells me, I am with you. I will walk through the fear with you. You are not alone. Because see, I think when I'm alone, I am in the fear. It's just can get like terror for me. And it's not like that anymore. I have a lot of years doing recovery, and it's the fear is so different today than it used to be. And real quick on sex, the bottom of page 69, in meditation, it says, in other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. It means we treat any other problem the same as we would treat sex. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. There it is. The right answer will come. Because remember, it talked about morals. Back there on page 45, it's talking to us about philosophy and morals. And that morals are right and wrong. They're telling you the right answer is going to come from God. It says, God alone can judge our sex situation. But they just told us, God alone can judge any situation. It doesn't have to be sex. And God needs to be the final judge. And I do not tell my sponsees what they need to do. We may discuss something and I'll tell them to take it to prayer and meditation. Give me a call in a week or so. Let me know what they got from God, how they were guided. I have a responsibility as a sponsor in this program to get the people I work with to be dependent on God and not dependent on me. I am human aid and I am beyond human aid. And this is one of the biggest, I want to say crimes, biggest problems in recovery and sponsorship. And they are my friends. They are not someone that I boss around. Everyone I sponsor, my friends, and I love them dearly. They are what makes my life so rich. Okay, now I'm going to go over to the, I'm doing good. Okay, now I'm going to go over to the bottom of page 70. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for you what you could not do for yourself. Top of 71. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. Oh, now it's self-will that's blocking me off. See, I believe in my experience and people I work with, Pat T is a brother to me, and I work a lot with him. I believe I am never blocked from God. How am I blocked from God? If I'm blocked from God, how did I write inventory? I turn my will and my life, right, Mike? I turn my will and my life over to a God I'm blocked from? I don't think so. I would have never. I think that when I'm so playing God, when I'm in self-will, that I create the illusion and the delusion that I am blocked from God because of my definition of God. If there's God, I will always feel him. Oh, I don't feel God. I'm blocked from him. Well, God's not a feeling. God is a knowing. God is consciousness, awareness, not a feeling. Stay with what you know, not what you feel. Sixth sense. God is a sense. I can never be blocked from God. How am I sober? How did I do step two? How did I do anything if I was blocked from God? I know this is controversial, but I have to tell you my truth because it is a truth that has been recent for me. And I'm so happy that it's a truth. Okay, here I go. Now I want to take you to the end. I'm going to finish in about 10 minutes. So I have all of this inventory together and I'm going to fifth step. And I want to read to you the paragraph into action on page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. I may have an obstacle in my path. It may be that can of baked jealousy back there that needs to go. You know what I mean? But I'm not blocked from God. I look at it like, you know how it says in step 11, going with the stream of life? I look like the stream, like of water that is my channel to God. And maybe it'll get some rocks in it or some things in it, but I'm not blocked. But it might be able to flow a little more clearly and a little more smoothly if I get rid of anything that obstacles that are there. Okay. And sometimes there are obstacles, but not blocked. And to discover the obstacles in my path, we have admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our fingers on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. Excuse me. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our defects. Okay, so that says two important things that I have to see right there. My defects of character and the nature of my defects. Okay, those are two different things. And I never realized that. But anytime the big book uses the word nature, it is inside. Remember when it said my emotional nature in the spiritual malady on page 52, my emotions are what you might see out here. You may see my anger. You may see my fear. You may see my jealousy. You may see my judgment. Those are my emotions out here, but my emotional nature is inside. You don't see how I'm experiencing life on the inside. That's a different story. That's how I live a double life. I live a double life because I have a life that's happening inside and outside, and they're not connected. And I get to live a life whole under God, which is different. So I have that they talk about my defects of character and the nature of my defects. The nature of my defects are in the fourth column, and they are the fear and the delusion. You may see my defects of character will show up in the selfish attitude and the self-seeking behavior. You'll see them. That's where you're going to see jealousy and judgment and rudeness and rejection and all that stuff that you can see. You'll see that there. But underneath that, there's something going on that you won't see. And there's something going on there that I can't work on. I may work on the defects of character. I may be able to make a decision to be less judgmental and do it. But if I want to pull these defects out by the root, if I want them out by the root and not just out by the tops, I'm going to have to get down to the fear and the delusion. And the fear and delusion you can't see. And maybe, just maybe, the people that I resent in column one are also operating like that. Maybe I don't see their fear and their delusion that is making them do what they do. So maybe I can have more love, patience, and tolerance for them. But I have to get that deep with the fear and the delusion, or I will not be pushed to step six at the same level. There will not be the gift of desperation that I need to continually to build this relationship with God. And it is, for me, it has been life-changing. So I go through, I do my fifth step, and the questions that I ask on the fifth step, you can get them on our website, are, do I see what's objectionable about, let me go over to step six first. Let me read step six. If we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step six. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Can't live without it. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If I still cling to something I will not let go of, I ask God to help me be willing. Okay. So as I'm hearing inventory, as each person reads an inventory to me, okay, after they read it, I'm going to ask these questions. Do you see what's objectionable about this interaction? Objectionable means I don't want it. It's not okay. And do you see what's objectionable? Your behavior, your thinking, this. And we discuss it for a few minutes. Do you see on your own power you couldn't have behaved any differently or done any differently? That inventory they're reading is on their own power, even if they have power. I have power. I'm not powerless today because I've been around a long time and I have power, but I need more power. I need more power to take me beyond where I am now. So do I see I couldn't have done any differently on my own power? Yes, I do see that. Okay. And do I see any behavior or resentment that I'm clinging to that I'm unwilling to let go of? And when I'm hearing that fifth step, if they're unwilling, if they're clinging, we say a prayer right there for the willingness. And I add something to this because this has come in the last few years. I add, are you willing to forgive? One of the things I see is that when resentments are not totally gone, part of the reason is that I'm not willing to forgive. And it says on the bottom of 77 into the ninth step, we go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit. Well, how am I going to go to them in a helpful and giving spirit? If I haven't forgiven, am I going to fake it? I don't think so. But I was doing that for a long time. But some of them I did forgive just by not even thinking about it. Do you know what I mean? Now it's on purpose. Forgiveness is on purpose because when I'm willing to forgive, God will carry me in step six. So I go all through the inventory with them, listening to all the inventory. And then when I'm done with the inventory, I read the promises of step five. And on the bottom of page 75, it says, carefully reading the first five proposals, which are the first five steps. I read the first three with them. Then I send them home to do the fourth proposal of consideration in step six. And this is the way it looks. And this has been one of the most life-changing and moving transformation. Someone has their mic open. It's been one of the most moving transformations in my life. It's changed me deeply. So what we do is in step six, we do a meditation and we put all the inventory in front of us. And I pick up the first resentment. And let's say that it is to my brother. I glance at that resentment inventory front and back. I don't have to reread it. I know what I wrote at our fifth step. I glance at it front and back. I put it down. And in a meditative way, I put myself like a little Buddha. I put my hands out and I close my eyes. And I picture my brother right in front of me. He's right there. And I ask these questions. Can I see what's objectionable about this interaction, my behavior, my attitude, my thinking? Can I see on my own power I couldn't have behaved any differently or done any differently? Is there anything I'm clinging to that I'm unwilling to let go of? And if I'm clinging in that moment, I say a prayer asking God to help me be willing. And usually it leaves right away. Very rarely does anyone cling, but it's happened. The last question, am I willing to turn to God for help with all these things I find objectionable from now on? Not from the past, from now on. And I go through and I ask, am I willing to forgive again? And it goes fast. I go through all of that because it says an hour long and you can do it in an hour. I go through all of the resentments and then I have something else for the fear. Sex inventory, I do the same way. And then I read God, my sex ideal. And then when I'm done, if there's nothing I'm clinging to, I go on to step seven. And let me tell you, this meditation at step six is so life-changing. And when I do the seven-step prayer, it says when ready. When ready means when I'm ready to turn to God for help with everything I found objectionable from now on. When I'm ready with everything. And only then do I say the seven-step prayer. And I want to say it for you. And before I send the people do this at home, they don't do the meditation with me. They don't do the seven step prayer with me. When they do the meditation and they're going to do the seven step prayer, I suggest they do it on their knees. And I tell them the room they're in to look at the open doorway in the room or doorway in the room that they're in before they say the seven step prayer. And in that doorway, I want them on the top of the doorway to picture the keystone from the third step. It can be any way you want it. It can be Art Deco, Art Nouveau, whatever. Anyway, decorate that keystone in your mind's eye and put it on top of that doorway. And when you say that seven-step prayer, when ready, we say something like this: "My creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." And then they're to get up and they're to look at the doorway and they're to walk through that doorway. And they walk through that doorway hand in hand with their creator in a new relationship, that from now on, this commitment at step seven is the biggest commitment, six and seven, to the relationship with God of any steps. My commitment is that when those things that were objectionable come up, I turn to God for help. I don't know what God's going to take away or doesn't take away. That is up to God. But this is a commitment to a way of life that when things come up that are objectionable, I turn to God for help. Not from the past. The past is over. But from the future. I mean, to the future, from now on, I turn to God for help. This is my practice, turning to God for help. Thank you for letting me be of service.